Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, to friends, students, and allies scattered across the planet, and anyone else who cares or dares to listen. This is once again your navigator, John Lash, recording on the morning of the 22nd of January, 2013. And this is Nav Briefing 38. The title is Loading the Coil. Those of you who listened to the previous briefing on the Matangi Eye will note that I'm talking at the same moment or following up that recording with this one. So it's now about 2:45 in the morning here, and the exact moment of the lunar occultation of Jupiter would be at 4 a.m. Madrid time. So this is the first instance in which I am actually recording a nav briefing during a lunar occultation, that is to say, during a test run for Channel 16. So the main drift of this briefing will be about Channel 16 and where we've come so far with our experiment and where we may go from here. I must say it's a delightful experience to be recording an AMP briefing about the Channel 16 trial, Channel 16 test run, the next to the last one we're doing, while it's underway. In order to undertake this daring venture, I have to resort to special equipment that I use. Now, you might picture me standing here or sitting here in the navigator's writing room with a headset on. And of course, the way that works is the headset contains two earphones which go over my ears and then the mic. So I'm not really using the earphones, just using the mic to record. But on this special occasion, I resort to a really dazzling trick of Gaian technology in order to do a recording while I'm actually monitoring Channel 16 simultaneously. You may wonder, how does he pull that off? Well, I have these two cats here, you see, and they're flopped out sleeping on the bed, or they were just a few minutes ago. What is required for me to conduct this delicate experiment is to pick up my cats without waking them up. So I have, they're pretty heavy. As you know, cats are heavier when they're sleeping. There is some law of physics there. So I take Rumi in my left hand, and I slide my right hand under Nikki, and amazingly, they remain in their sleeping cat postures, which is sort of like a half fetal curl with their paws extended and their face in their paws. And amazingly, if I pick them up really, really carefully, one in each hand, they remain in that position. And then what I do is I have special fixtures on the earphones, and I actually hang the sleeping cats on each side of my head. So rather than wearing a pair of earphones as I'm conducting this delicate operation of talking about Channel 16 transmission while I'm in the midst of it, I do it using this elegant dual set of sleeping cats attached to my ears. And with that technology, how can I fail? Now, before I launch into this commentary on Channel 16 as the test is underway, I feel compelled to make two statements directed to those who may not be familiar with the Gaia Navigation Experiment. It could be someone who just came upon this recording and never heard me speak ever before. Or there may be someone listening to this in the future, 5 months or 5 years from now, who picks this up. And didn't even know that anything like the Gaia navigation experiment ever took place. And so I feel compelled to add a little prelude here, addressed to such individuals. And doing so, I also need to repeat something. I don't like to repeat myself, you know, but in the teaching process, of course, certain things have to be repeated. So let me repeat again to all those who are listening. I'm recording on January 22nd, 2013, and what I am saying, the instructions that I am giving, and indeed those that I receive from Dakini channels, and the particulars of the Gaia navigation experiment to which I refer are all closely and meticulously time-factored. That means that what I say at this moment is relevant to this moment in a particular way, in a specific and precise manner. That does not mean, however, that someone listening to this talk after this moment, whether you be a crew member or not, is missing the boat. Because even though the information, if you want to call it that, the intel that I provide in these briefings is time factored to the moment that I send it, it does not remain limited and restricted to that temporal framework. The point is that none of what I'm doing and none of what you're doing with me and with the planetary animal mother is strictly and exclusively limited to linear time. On the contrary, the more practice you have in planetary tantra, the more intimately, lucidly, and delightfully you live in the dance of celestial movements and in the play of the celestial code, the more you slip out of linear time. But of course, you don't slip entirely out of it. So the result is that through this practice, you come to live somewhat in linear time, but also in non-linear time. I, for myself, have been experiencing increasing difficulty living in linear time since the GNE began. It's posed some practical and professional problems for me, needless to say, in order to cope with the practical realities of my life, the practical and material circumstances of my life, and in order to coordinate myself with certain of my professional pursuits that lie outside of planetary tantra, I obviously have to be in the same linear time frame as others, and it's becoming increasingly difficult for me to stay in linear time. The practice in the Nahual and the practice of being intermediary, as it were, between the Nahual and the Tonal has produced a situation in which I find myself in a kind of slipstream of time. And the slipstream carries me into non-linear time and holds me there. And it's somewhat of a struggle to hold myself back from the force of that slipstream. It's an attractive, powerful force. It's easy for me to go, plunge lightly and delightfully into the slipstream of non-linear time. And so I've had some difficulties lately taking care of my affairs. I'm sure some of you out there are experiencing the same thing, and I can only warn you that it gets more intense. But at the end of the day, if I might use that cliche, the proof that you're really mastering the process is that you live in both. So, when I talk now, when I speak now, I'm speaking in a framework of linear time. And some of the things that I say are addressed to that framework. But actually, what I say extends beyond that framework. So those listening to this talk 5 months or 2 years or 5 years from now can receive as much from it as those who are listening to it in the time frame to which it refers. So this is an important point. And every once and again, I have to go back and underscore this point. You could say that linear time operates in the tonal. It is the operative time sequence and the operative time pattern of the tonal. Whereas nonlinear time operates in the nahual. And so, between the nahual and the tonal, you shift. And what I've experienced recently, and it's caused me a considerable degree of despair at moments, it's been extremely difficult. So what I'm finding is that I can be in the tonal, and I can be in the nahual, prefer to be there, and actually am there more than I'm in the tonal. To put it in another way, folks, I'm living my imagination more vividly than I'm living the actual world to which my imagination refers. Okay? If you want to translate it in that way. What I found over the last couple of months, which had a certain debilitating and perturbing effect upon me, was that shifting from one to the other was murder. Absolute murder. So, if I'm cruising along in the tonal and something comes up in practical or material matters, such as putting air in the tires of the car, I have to shift from the tonal to the nahual. And then, I have to shift from the nahual to the tonal, and then after I put air in the tires, get back there again as soon as I can. And it is the shifting back and forth, lurching back and forth, or being pulled, being jerked out of the nahual by something that requires my attention in the tonal. That was really, really getting to me and really getting me down. And that played a certain role in the lapse of my transmission over the last month or month and a half, but not completely. The main reason for the lapse in my transmission and the radio silence largely through the month of December and into January was the stall. You know, you've seen it before. We've gone through it before, being in these stalls. I can't. When she is stalled in an apogee, and when she is boring intensely into a recapitulation, it's difficult for me to transmit what I'm getting. And the exponential volume of what I'm getting is indescribable. And any time I'm receiving a massive amount of intel in excess to what I can transmit. And that itself has a somewhat paralyzing effect. So, anyway, don't know why I got on that rift. Just thought maybe some of you would like to know what I've been going through in the last 6 weeks or 2 months. The final thing I want to say to all and everyone on this planet before I begin this briefing formally is that we in the Gaia Navigation Experiment follow a certain rule. And if you have never heard me before, this is the first thing you need to know to listen to John Lash. And I will put it in the second person, as if you, whoever you are standing in front of me. Now, the crew members who hear the words that are coming from me now already know this. And they can stand there and listen to this. And they can back me on this. They can nod their heads and they will agree about what I'm going to say now to those of you who do not know the essential rule of our practice. Quote, "You cannot have a part in the solution. You can only have the whole solution and know your part in it. End quote. This is the primary principle, the primary rule of planetary tantra for those who are engaged in the correction of the wisdom goddess. What do I mean by solution? I mean the solution to the problem of evil on the planet Earth. The solution to what's wrong with humanity. The solution to what's wrong, gone wrong, with a divine experiment conceived for the Anthropos by the Aeon Sophia in her unilateral dreaming from the pleromic hub of this galaxy. The solution that would bring humanity back to itself, back to its senses, restore its sanity, to use a phrase from the old 12-step recovery movement, and render into freedom and enjoyment the life story of every single human animal in the world. That's the solution. I repeat the fundamental rule. You cannot have a part of the solution. You can only have the whole solution and see your part in it. End quote. So the difference between what John Lash teaches and what every other person on the planet is teaching is just that. They are showing you, offering you, teaching you a part of the solution. I'm not doing that. I am teaching you the whole solution. And you find your part in it. But if you don't know the whole solution, you don't know your part. Another way to translate this is to say that through knowing the solution, which is the sacred narrative of the divine Sophia, you achieve a transpersonal aim for your life. And unless you have a transpersonal aim, your personal life can't really go anywhere except into narcissism or codependency. So there you have it. For some reason I felt compelled to say those things at the beginning of this talk. And now I'm going into the technicalities of the test run of Channel 16, which is right now underway and culminates in my locality 1 hour from now. Well, it culminates for the whole world 1 hour from now. It culminates at 3 hours universal time on the 22nd of January, and that is 4 o'clock here. So here we go. I want to express my great appreciation and gratitude for those of you who have stuck with this Channel 16 experiment. I know that I have not been faithful to you in the sense that I have participated on the Channel 16 forum, adding my input and reading and commenting on the input that you have contributed. I would love to do that, but I simply can't. So far, I have not been able to do that. It's just beyond my capacity to participate in that particular format of communication. But I want you to know that I am really grateful that it's there and that you are using it, and I know you are learning from it and developing extensively your faculties of telepathy and your discernment. I also know that it is certain, absolutely certain, that you have registered in your minds the momentous significance of that which is in the sky above my house right now, looking high up and to the southwest, where I see the moon close to the planet Jupiter, and I recognize the massive structure of the celestial anchor. Just imagine, this is the first time in history since around 450 BC that people have actively in real time participated in the creation of a new constellation. I've explained in my talks on Gaian ethics that the constellation of the scales, which is the only human-made artifact in the zodiac, please note, was introduced by the Telestai in the 5th century BC as a correlate to the emergence of certain faculties in humanity at that time. And those faculties were due to the introduction of an extremely powerful technology called reading. So the initiates of the mystery schools, the Telestai, were the educators of the ancient world, and they taught literacy, and there was a high, high degree of literacy in the ancient world, in fact, much higher than the modern world today. And that was due to the dedication and skill of the Telestai acting as educators to all classes of society, to all classes, even to the slave class. And this technology of literacy was a momentous contribution from the mystery schools, obviously, but it carried a momentous risk as well. The technology of literacy, which involves reading and writing, engaged the neural circuits of the human animal in an entirely new way. There was a deepening of subjectivity as a result of this. And as a further result, human animals acquired that which we today call conscience. Now, I put it to you that conscience, for which we have the Greek word synodesis, first used by Euripides in the play Medea. You might think you know what it is. Well, think again. I'm not even sure I know. But conscience, let's say, is a faculty of judgment in the human animal. We'll leave it at that for the moment. And that this faculty of judgment was both sharpened and threatened by literacy. And so the initiates needed to introduce something in the cosmic environment that would represent the acquisition of that new faculty, and in turn, that would reflect the properties of the faculty of judgment, which is, of course, balancing one thing against another. In ethics, you also have options. In ethics, in every situation, if you are an ethical animal, you have an option. You can do something or not do it. And that, again, is the act of balance. You balance your judgment between these two options, and then you choose one or the other. So the constellation of the scales was set in the sky at that time. Of course, the Telestai did not design the constellation of the scales. They did not put the stars in place, nor did they in any manner, influence the external appearance of the cosmos at that time. But what they did was they taught their students to look at those stars that are placed between the Scorpion and the Virgin, and to picture them as a set of scales or a balance. They taught the visualization of the star formation that was already there. And this, in fact, was an age-old technique, thousands and thousands of years old, that was traditional in the mystery schools from their inception at the time of the emergence of the Magian order on the Urmian plateau around 6000 BC in this cycle. So the Telestai were adepts at this kind of thing, and we today have the high privilege to experience something like what they did. Those of you in the crew can now look at the sky and see the magnificent sight of the celestial anchor. It is vivid, it is unmistakable, it is immense, it is powerful, and it has the feeling of an anchor. It has the weight and the majesty of an anchor. And you have been taught to visualize it based on the pre-existing positions of certain stars, with the addition of the planet Jupiter in a unique and central position in the formation, in the structure of the anchor. The celestial anchor also represents or reflects a faculty that you are developing. It represents a number of things. For one thing, it represents and displays the actual mechanism of pleromic relay. I mean, how wild is that? You can actually see the mechanism of pleromic relay. And additionally, it represents that faculty in you by which you attune to pleromic relay. So not only is the divine Sophia herself, the Aeon Sophia, embodied in this planet, now in immediate real-time two-way contact with the pleromic center, with the aeons of the pleromic center, but we as well have an integrated circuit that makes it possible to be party to their transmissions, to their communications, to their signal systems. And the point at which we become integral to that massive aeonic system of intelligence, of interactive intelligence linking the galactic center and the Earth, the way we are integral to it is by placing ourselves in channel 16, placing our minds in channel 16. Now, I'd like to talk about some of my reflections so far regarding the use of channel 16 and what I've learned, and make a proposal for you as to where we proceed from here. Now, first of all, to make sure we're all on the same page here, the moment of this recording is the moment of the next to the last test run of Channel 16. You understand that. These test runs began back in the fall. At that time, I proposed to use the moments, the exact moments, the exact hour of the lunar occultation of Jupiter to do a telepathic experiment to see if we could tune into channel 16 and achieve some kind of telepathic contact among ourselves. All right. I indicated that these experiments would continue to the end of the year, and you may recall that moving into 2013, there are two more such occasions. The current one, January 22nd, and the succeeding one and final one, February 18th, at 12 hours Universal Time. After that day, throughout the year 2013, there are no longer any lunar occultations of Jupiter. Those occultations, by the way, were visually detectable in the southern hemisphere and in the South Seas, I believe, but they were not so in the northern hemisphere. So you could not actually see the body of the moon pass in front of the planet Jupiter. I have seen this once in my life, and it was in Los Angeles back in the 70s. So anyway, here we are at the next to the last test. So what happens after the tests are finished? And how do we assess the success of our tests? Well, I trust you are doing that in the ongoing dialogues and discussions that you're having on the Channel 16 forum. I do not mean callously or in any superior manner to disregard your discussions. I would simply like to add my two cents to your discussions. which I can best do in this manner by talking to you in a briefing. I could not do it by writing it down and posting it in the forum. That would be impossible for me to do. I want to draw your attention to the motion of Jupiter during the period of its retrograde cycle, which ends, by the way, on January 31st. You may recall by now that the outer planets, Jupiter and Saturn, both have retrograde cycles. These cycles occur at the moment when the Earth, which is on an inner orbital track, overtakes Jupiter or Saturn or Mars, which is on an outer orbital track, moving more slowly. Jupiter moves more slowly. It takes 12 times as long to go around the Sun as the Earth. So the more speedy body of the mothership passing Jupiter on the outer, which lies on the outer track, causes the appearance that Jupiter falls backward against the background of the stars. And that is the retrograde period. And for Jupiter and Saturn, there is a 5-month retrograde period every single year. Now, I bring your attention to what this pattern, what this retrograde motion of Jupiter actually looks like. You will recall that when the formation of the anchor appeared in the first week of September 2012, the planet Jupiter stood on a line between the star Aldebaran in the eye of the bull and the star Elnaut in the bull's northern horn, Elnaut being shared with another constellation, Auriga, or the charioteer. So just draw a line from the bright star Aldebaran to Elnaut. That's the crossbeam, the upper crossbeam, crossbar of the celestial anchor. And at the moment that we realized the visualization of that new constellation, Jupiter stood right on the crossbar, more displaced closer to Aldebaran than to Elnaut. That's how it looked at the time. And then Jupiter began its retrograde movement, and it actually shifted back in the direction of the Pleiades. And it shifts about 9 degrees, typically, during the 5 months of its retrograde cycle. So Jupiter became, we saw Jupiter displaced from its position right on the crossbar, back along the stem of the antenna, toward the tip or apex of the antenna or anchor, the Pleiades. Well, you see, I'm using the term antenna and anchor correlatively. I'm talking about the same thing. You can view that new constellation as an anchor, or you can view it as a whip antenna. It's the same thing. Let's stick to the metaphor of the antenna for a moment. What do you see, what do you imagine when you picture the retrograde motion of Jupiter along the stem of the antenna in the direction of the Pleiades? Well, I took a screenshot from Stellarium, two actually, and I'll send them on to be posted with this briefing. The first screenshot shows the wide view of the celestial antenna as it appears in the morning sky where I am located. The second illustration is a detailed view of Jupiter in its position retrograded back to its extreme point toward the Pleiades. And you'll see that what I've drawn in that second detailed image is something like a coil. You can say that the knot of the coil is at Jupiter. And then imagine that the coil expands, proceeding down the stem of the antenna. It expands and it expands and it expands until finally the coil touches the two stars, Elnaut and Elnaut. on one end and Aldebaran on the other. So what you see is a slinky type of object, really, like a slinky, but it's an expanding slinky. What I would have you visualize is a coil that is positioned on the crossbar of the celestial anchor, or the crossbar of the antenna, if you will. So the antenna, which has the Pleiades at the apex, has a coil at that position. And I've spoken of this before, I think. I've called it the induction coil, but I don't know what that means. What is an induction coil? It's an induction coil. It's a condenser coil. I'm just using these terms because this is what comes to my mind. This metaphor of the coil serves to capture a crucial event regarding the celestial anchor or antenna, and that event is the tuning of the antenna. So as I said, when I proposed the test runs for Channel 16, that we undertake these test runs in order to tune our telepathic abilities as human animals and to direct our attuned abilities to Channel 16, to locate all of our telepathic activity in Channel 16 as a major routing location. It is the router of all of our telepathic abilities. It is the place where they are received and redistributed. And during the time that we are testing Channel 16, prior to actually using it for something in the world, what are we going to use it for? Well, I think I'll get to that here at the end of this talk. I may now be able to say what it can be used for, okay? But while we are learning how to use it, Jupiter is making this retrograde motion, which may be visualized as the stretching of the inductive coil. And what happens while the coil is being stretched, and that would be until January 31st, 2013, is that the coil is being loaded. Everything that you have been doing in your telepathic experiments with each other, whether or not you're using the dance with Banderillas and the syntax I proposed or not, but using an image, using a phrase, and using the call sign 516, GNE 516, everything that you've been doing over the past 4 or 5 months has been loading that coil. The coil is being loaded with your intent and loaded with that power that you carry by directing your mental attention to anything whatsoever. So just imagine, for instance, that I go out and buy a kit for constructing a model airplane. And so I come home and I lay out all the parts of the kit on the table, and then I direct my attention to the instruction of the kit. And I construct it, I glue the parts together, I finally paint it, and at the end I have this glorious model airplane. Some old classic type of airplane with double wings or something like that. Beautifully detailed. That is the product of my directed attention. I could not achieve that result. The airplane would not be there hanging in the room in my house if I had not put my attention into it, right? You are putting your attention into Channel 16, and that attention is loading the coil. So no matter what the success of the experiments, the fact that you are undertaking them assures that the coil is being loaded and charged with the human intention of a certain number of animals, with the intention of a certain number of human animals. That's called loading the coil. Now, as the coil is expanded and drawn back with Jupiter shifting toward the Pleiades, we load the coil. But as soon as Jupiter shifts out of its retrograde and begins to move forward again, it recompresses the coil, doesn't it? It recompresses the coil. That means that there is a major difference. There is a condition of major importance in the final test run of Channel 16 on February the 18th. And that is simply this, that that test run is conducted at a moment when the coil is compressing. The coil is compressing. Now, what does that mean? The coil is expanding and being loaded. If the coil is loaded while it's expanding, what happens when the coil is being compressed? Well, good question. I venture to say this. I mean, I venture to propose this to you, this concept. During the compression of the induction coil of the pleuromic relay mechanism, which transpires between the 1st of February and the 15th of April 2013, all of the force of the human attention that has been directed toward Channel 16 consolidates into a circuit that then is installed in Channel 16, which is the human-animal access circuit to pleuromic relay. So what we've actually been doing by using the call sign and sending an image and a phrase through Channel 16 is constructing a permanent circuit in Channel 16 for our exclusive use as human animals. Bear in mind that we are piggybacking, as it were, with these experiments with Channel 16, we're piggybacking on a cosmic relay device. Bear in mind that the purpose of the celestial anchor and the pleuromic relay through the Pleiades is for the planet. It is the realignment, if you will, of the intelligence of the planet Earth with its source in the galactic center. And that's a cosmic affair. That's a matter between aeons. Since the first week in September 2012, the Aeon Sophia has been uploading an enormous amount of data and memory to the aeons in the galactic core, and they in turn have been debriefing her on the experiences that she has undergone as a planetary animal. That is all a matter, an affair among the gods. Yet we human animals living on the planet, living in her body, have the privilege to attach our attention and will and imagination and passion to the actions of the gods through this circuit. In order for we human animals to use the relay device, we have to install our own modem-type instrument in that cosmic device. It is a cosmic device, the intention for which is to serve cosmic purposes. But when we install our own private access circuit in it, then we can use it for our purposes here on the planet. And also, who knows? Some of you may get in tune with the galactic aeons. I wouldn't be surprised if you already are. I know some of you already are. Come on. So, this is really exciting. Channel 16 is interactive. Gaia Sophia provides Channel 16 as an open circuit within the Shakti cluster. But in order for us to use Channel 16 effectively and consistently and coherently, and to be able to verify that we are in fact using it, we must construct our own access circuit within Channel 16, and that's what we've been doing. We must configure Channel 16 to our interhuman purposes. And this gets to the point or the question of what are we going to use it for? Well, just want to return you for a moment to the image of the coil. Think of the induction coil of the pleuromic antenna being pulled back for 5 months and expanded by Jupiter. And then think of it as contracting through February and March, contracting more rapidly. It only takes 2.5 months. It contracts twice as fast as it expanded. It contracts through February, March, and half of the month of April until Jupiter returns to the 15th degree of Gemini, where it was positioned when pleuromic relay was completed on the 7th of September, 2012. And that's the whole picture. And with that compression, there is added a force to human telepathy that comes from the support of the pleuromic aeons themselves. The compression process is very much like the recoil of a spring. And it's on that recoil, heed my words, it's on that recoil, and in the one occasion of that recoil, and in the special and spectacular and unique event of that recoil, timed to the spring of 2013, that there is one chance to launch a massive psyop against the operations of satanic magic on this planet. One chance, and one chance only. So what are we going to use the recoil event to do? Precisely that. Precisely that. To launch a particular coordinated assault, a particular psyops. And the nature of that psyops and the nature of that act of Gaian psychotronics is exact. And its efficacy depends upon its exactitude. How can any human being do this? Well, alone, we can't do it. No human animal alone, or even any group of human animals, can do this alone. The only way this can be done is under close instruction of three infernal witches who are living in the human psyche, living in your imagination, as it were, but they're not just living there, I'll guarantee you that. They're also living in the atmosphere of the earth, and they're as real as anything else that's in the atmosphere, such as a cloud, such as the jet stream, such as the Van Allen belts. They're as real as any of that. And those concentrated nodes of the intelligence and life force of Sophia herself are streaming instruction and magic power toward humanity. How do you receive that power? By listening, by learning, by sharing what you learn, and by following the precise instruction of three particular Dakinis. Listen again to that astounding paragraph I wrote. I have to say, astounding even to myself. I was astounded when I found it not long ago. From the Metahistory essay called Goddess to the Rescue. Quote, the second Kalki is not a single man, but the entire male contingent attached to her Namanakaya vehicle of wrath. The second Kalki is the summed force of Kalika warriors of male gender. By contrast, Kalika warriors of the female gender are the summed expression of Matangi, the Matangi aspect of the planetary animal mother. This distinction is absolutely critical for an effective strategy of spiritual engagement in Gayan Tantra, following the triple formula of love, war, and magic. End quote. So now picture this. This is a developing vision. You know, I was found myself thinking this afternoon of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the War Scroll. If you go back and look at Metahistory, not in his image, you find that I described in there what a horrific document was the War Scroll from the Dead Sea Scrolls. And I described the War Scroll as an hallucinatory, visionary document that describes the formation of troops to engage in a mythical war, in a mythical battle. So in that case, the Zadokim believed that they represented the sons of light and they were in a battle against the sons of darkness, and the formation of the legions of the sons of light is described in this insane hate-fuming hallucination of the War Scrolls. And it's funny, I thought of that this evening when I described the three Dakinis with their arms locked. It's sort of like I'm presenting an alternative to the War Scrolls. Okay, two can play at that game. You know, the War Scrolls and the ideology behind the Dead Sea Scrolls material has had and still continues to have an absolutely devastating effect on life on this planet. The ideology of the Zadokim is expressed in Talmudic Judaism, which essentially declares war on Gentiles and Goyim. That is war on all who are non-Jewish, non-Zadok Jewish. And even the poor Jews don't even know that this war has been declared in the name of their ethnic identity. They need a serious wake-up call. But just as those insane people of the Dead Sea could propose a visionary scenario to launch their war on humanity, I propose one to launch a war on them. And the formation I propose looks like this. Kali Central. Kurukula locked to her left arm. Matangi locked to her right arm. And behind these three women are two V-shaped columns. Two V-shaped columns. The first V is the V of male Kalika warriors that stands directly behind Kali. And I stand at the head of that V. The second V is the V of female Kalika warriors, and they stand behind Matangi on the right arm of Kali. And there is a third contingent to come. But for now, the war begins with the double V formation. VV, the double V formation. Male Kalika warriors, female Kalika warriors. The third formation that gathers behind Kurukula gathers as the war unfolds. That is to say that that formation takes shape as certain human animals come into the fray as the battle is underway, as they take the side of the Kalika warriors. But those who are in the double V formation are in their position on the front line as the battle begins. And the battle begins, in case you didn't get the message by now, in the spring of 2013. So how to fight this battle? What are the weapons? What are the tools? Each of these three dakinis presents very specific tools of knowledge and tools of attack for this engagement. It's time that I introduce to you a certain phrase, which some of you may have heard. You may have come across it on the internet. This phrase is called revelation of the method. Now, revelation of the method is an instruction of Kurukula. And the use of Kali's knife and of the use of Matangi's knife and Matangi's eye is, of course, the instruction of Matangi. Also, Matangi has the very special role, complementary to Kurukula's role, of teaching the trick to defeat the trickster. Note that there is Kurukula on the left side of Kali, revelation of the method. And there is Matangi on the right side, defeating the trickster. The two things go together, because the method to be revealed is the method of the trickster. What is the method of the trickster? Who is the trickster? Between Kurukula and Matangi, the instructions to these questions are coming. They're coming in a joint or buddy system from those two aspects of Gaya Sophia. Kurukula being a diamond sky dakini, Matangi being a Mahavidya. And in the center between the two is the instruction of Kali on the destruction of illusion. You see, in great part, the power that predators and evil people command in this world, in great measure, the power that they exercise is due to the illusion of that power. But the illusion does not merely belong to those who wield power. It also belongs to those upon whom it is wielded, the victims. Both the victims and perpetrators are caught in the same illusion of power, and Kali is there to destroy that illusion. And how she does so, you can see with your own eyes. Hold this visualization and concentrate in your mind on the instructions that I have described specific to these infernal guides and sublime warriors. aspects of the wisdom goddess. All who engage in this experiment are facing the inconceivable privilege to participate in an event that certainly is one of its kind, I'll tell you that. Now, moving toward that event, the entire world is moving toward that event without even knowing it is. The entire herd of the human animals is moving toward that event. They'll know when it hits them. They'll know when they hit the wall. And when this third and final assault on the Anthropos happens, it may well make 9/11 look like a Sunday school picnic that went wrong. I suspect that things are going to move really, really fast in the spring of 2013. Really fast. And I'm not saying any of this to you, of course, I'm not, to make you afraid. On the contrary, there's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to be afraid of if you can learn what is to be learned. There's nothing to be afraid of with Kali destroying the illusion of power. That hangs over this world, that hangs over this planet. There is only liberation. Needless to say, even death is liberation. There's only liberation, and there's liberation from death, and death is also an illusion, and Kali also destroys that illusion. So if you're ready to see the illusions of the human race destroyed in front of your eyes, then you're tuning into the right station and you're listening to the right man, because that's where I'm going. The ultimate use of channel 16 is twofold. Once the circuit is established with the full recoil event in the middle of April, Channel 16 is there as a gift from the wisdom goddess to the human animals of the Anthropos. There are two ways that you can use it. One, in the personal or interpersonal sense, in the interpersonal method, and the other in the cosmic method. You can use Channel 16 with security and consistency after our tests are completed. I suggest that you use it in this manner. You buddy up. One of you located in Canada makes an agreement using archonic forms of technology with one of you living, say, in New Zealand. And you make an agreement that you will use Channel 16 to communicate with each other by a very simple procedure. You choose an image together. Let's say it's the image of the buffalo-headed Yamantaka, whatever. You choose an image, and the person in Canada says to the person in New Zealand, I'm going to place this image in Channel 16 after I've used the call sign, GNE 516. I'm going to use the call sign, get in the channel, and place this image in the channel. And with it, I'm going to send you a message, but I won't tell you what the message is, but I'll tell you what the image is. What then happens is that the individual in New Zealand receives the message through Channel 16, but how does he or she know when he or she has received it? When they see the flash subliminally of the image that goes with the message. It's image and message, image and message. The image is made explicit in the transmission. The message is not stated because the message is intended to be transmitted telepathically. So, for instance, if one of you buddies up with me, it would be the same thing. You would write me and you would say, John, here's the image I want to use, a coyote baying at the moon. You send me a picture of this image. And then you say, when I use the call sign and put this image in Channel 16, I'm also going to send you a message. Let me know if you get the message. This is the buddy system for using Channel 16 that I would propose from here on out. That is the interpersonal use, one-to-one communication through the console of the Shakti cluster. The second use is for all of us to transmit the same message at the same time, and not just a message. This act of transmission I propose to you would occur in the spring of 2013 at a moment to be designated. The purpose of this mission is straight and simple. It is to use Channel 16 to transmit into the subconscious of the entire human herd that signal which will then overpower the mind manipulation of black magic that is working in the subconscious. You are all familiar with the idea, and I think it's a good idea in certain ways, but handled in a badly by the people who are famous for promoting this idea, that the monstrous predators on this planet use the subconscious, that they use signs and symbols and icons, that they use corporate logos or Egyptian symbols disguised in corporate logos, that they use subliminal cuts in music videos, that they use all these dirty, down and dirty, sneaky techniques to transmit their intention and their agenda into the subconscious of the human race. What I propose to you is that the collective use of Channel 16 is exactly the same. Would it be possible to do that? I don't know. But it certainly is time to try. It's my intention to prepare this experiment as best I can, to the degree that I'm able, and to keep my sanity and still live here and feed the cats and put air in the tires occasionally, unless someone else comes along to do it for me. It's my intention to share the intel that I have on Gaian warfare with Matangi and with Kurukula. And the place that I will be concentrating, the topic that I will be concentrating on, is this odd and perplexing topic called the revelation of the method. What is the revelation of the method? This is where warfare begins, in the understanding of what is the revelation of the method, which leads directly to the recognition of the trickster, which leads directly to the trick to defeat the trickster. This is the strategic sequence of engagement in this war. And I invite you all to contemplate that. And whatever you may be doing in your experiments with Channel 16, enjoy yourself, continue to sharpen your faculties, and prepare yourself in delight. In delight, prepare yourself for that moment that is fast coming upon us. There is no other moment like this in the entire kalpa of 26,000 years. So I complete this talk at 4 o'clock, which is, in fact, the exact moment of the lunar occultation of Jupiter. The penultimate test of Channel 16. And I thank you for your attention and your patience.